Dagger, I'm your host, Lenny Bloom. Once again, we're here to scrape the bullshit off the truth and to expose the state secrets that the ruling elite hope you don't learn. Joining me on the line is Dr. Morgan Reynolds. Doctor, welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Thank you, Lenny.
Dr. Reynolds, you have recently published an article about your findings with regard to 9/11, and I wish you would share your findings with us and with the audience.
Actually, I've done more than just analyze aspects of 9/11, but have taken legal action against the agencies operating on behalf of the perps. Back in March, I filed a request for correction with NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, accusing them and their contractors of putting out bogus airplane animations and analysis.
Uh-huh.
And usually the agency responds within 60 days of such a request.
Right.
This is under the so-called Data Quality Act, which gave legislation passed in the year 2000 at the behest of corporate America, really, who wanted to have a vehicle to challenge data that government agencies put out and form the basis of new regulations. So this was kind of a novel use of this device. Well, it's been almost 6 months, and they still haven't responded to my request for correction. So there may be some good things that come out of that. But even more importantly, I have filed a complaint, a so-called Key Tam case, which is kind of a whistleblower type device. In the Southern District of New York, the U.S. court there, and my complaint has been unsealed, and this really drives off the NIST action in a way that only it's in a more serious forum here. So I filed a lawsuit. I represent the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, where, of course, the World Trade Center was, signed off on this and won't intervene. They have the right to intervene at any time, which is a bit of a disadvantage. But basically, I'm suing, as the court document says, on behalf of the United States of America,
uh-huh.
alleging that the contractors that NIST used, and they used some very big people, as well as the Silverstein organization, and Boeing and American Airlines and United Airlines, and I'm claiming that all these people were party to fraud. They defrauded the United States of America for profit, for compensation. And we demand that they surrender their payments and also suffer penalty. It's a lawsuit really by a citizen of the United States on behalf of the government, in a sense. I'm going after the contractors.
Right. Now, we should mention, even though this is available, the people who've already clicked on this to listen to this already have read your bio and recognize that your illustrious career, you served as chief economist for the U.S. Department of Labor during George Bush's first term, and you're the professor emeritus at Texas A&M University and a former director of the Criminal Justice Center at the National Center for Policy Analysis. Have you... being that I've been a follower of the Kennedy assassination and a student of the lies that the government's been putting out since 1964, were you aware of any, is this the first time that you have been aware of the government interfering with the truth? Is this the first time, did this first hit you? Is this 9/11? Like, prior to 9/11, did you have any indications about the other, quote, 9/11s, the assassinations and everything that was going on, or was 9/11 the thing that struck you?
Well, 9/11, beginning in 2004, Well, actually, 2003, I would say March 2003, when the Bush government invaded Iraq, I really started thinking. I said to myself, wow, if they would lie about this, and I knew it was a lie about WMD and Saddam's connection with the 9/11 terrorists and other sordid rubbish, and really most politically acute people were aware of that.
Yes.
But now I've just gone deeper and deeper into this, so... I was aware that the JFK assassination was an inside job, and it wasn't the Lee Harvey. Most Americans, you know, 8 out of 10, the polls show, don't believe the government on that.
Right.
It was, I think, the decisive event where basically the insiders operating on at the behest of the powers that be basically said it was an in-your-face, any president who threatens to go off the reservation as JFK did is going to be taken out. That's,
right.
That's why they did it, one reason they did it so publicly in such a horrifying way.
Yeah, let's. I don't want to dwell on the specifics of it, but that's interesting. Maybe we can deal with that on another show. But let's get back to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You've been studying this. Just for a moment, lead us down the path as to what you think was going on backstage. Not so much the motive, because that's a heavy question, too. But what about, you know, means, motive, opportunity is the standard detective's Bible. What do you think happened here? How was it done? And give us an idea as to what you feel went on.
Yeah, that's, of course, we don't really have that kind of firm data. We can...
I'm not worried about the data. What's your speculation?
Okay, my speculation...
Let's
go blue sky. Actually, my hook is going to be Robert Gates, the current defense secretary.
Yes.
Because he was president of Texas A&M University, my home university, where I'm still on the faculty as an emeritus or meritorious retired professor. And when I had something come out in June of 2005, Bush Insider says 9/11 was an inside job, was kind of the headline.
Uh-huh.
And then Robert Gates, then president of Texas A&M University, uttered words to the effect, it's on my website, where he said that anyone who would suggest that 9/11 was an inside job is beyond the pale, were his words.
Uh-huh.
We all know what we saw on 9/11, you know, like... What we see are these pixels in motion
on television,
and we're supposed to believe that Fox News or CBS is telling us a real story.
Right.
It's preposterous. But he, of course, is a Bush family loyalist.
Right.
And when Rummy went, of course, they got to put in somebody who is going to be trustworthy and not embarrass them, but behave in a way they... Now, Gates, furthermore, of course, Poppy Bush appointed him director of the CIA, and he was a lifer at the CIA. So he knew, and this is in the late 80s, here you got the Soviet Union was in danger of collapse. So one of the big issues is, how do you have national unity? Well, you need an external enemy. How do you keep the military, industrial, intelligence complex budgets pumped up and America scared? Well, when the Soviet Union fell, they needed a replacement, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, hey, they've got this lame story about the Muslim world, the Muslim, the Islamic extremists and fanatics and so be afraid, be very afraid. And anybody with any good sense knows it's the teeny bopper in the car opposite you that's the biggest threat to your life, not terrorism. Well, so they've cooked up, they've ginned up an artificial enemy. They've got they've had a lot of false flag operations, you know, running passes that they can blame.
And, yeah.
And basically stoking up, we'll call it World War IV, if you believe the Cold War was, World War III. So that's one of the biggest items here, is to keep all this, the people fearful and in line and, saluting the flag as lofted by your government. So that's pretty obvious,
okay.
I think, and will be more and more obvious to more and more Americans as we go along.
Uh-huh.
Now, there is a deeper, you know, the more speculative thing is, okay, you have Republican governments, you have Democratic governments, things come and go, but nothing really seems to change, right?
Yeah.
And that's the old powers that be. And as an economist, the thing I look at is the money
Yes.
And, well, the first thing when you mentioned money is a lot of people point to the Federal Reserve. But we should also point to, look at these modern governments. They're spending, like our government, even in, quote, prosperity, unquote.
Yes.
The deficits run in the neighborhood of $200 billion a year.
Right.
So they are spending nearly $1 billion a day, certainly a business day, over and above the taxes that they're scratching out of us, okay?
Yes.
Well, who supplies that money? Well, there's a lot of middlemen, and that takes me to Wall Street, the investment bankers.
Yes.
And the City of London. You know, the two money centers of the world.
Right.
And these guys, of course, make just almost unimaginable type money off the backs of all this trade, okay? And,
right.
And floating debt. Now, where this leads, of course, is some kind of a monetary crack-up in the end. And fiat paper money goes to its inherent or natural value, which is the value of the paper, you know?
Right. Right.
So, basically, it's some people, of course, then they say, oh, then you're pointing to the Jews. Hey, I'm not pointing to any religious or ethnic group. I'm pointing to the big money, you know, the big money.
Right.
And a lot of these people, of course, are it's intergenerational, you know?
Yes.
So, you know, there's a lot of candidates around, you know, that the members of the Bilderbergers and the trilateral,
yeah, yeah,
on and on, the Queen of England, the Pope, and the Jesuits.
Well, I wasn't really worried about who right now, but those are good ones to touch on. But what I wanted to get into was what you thought from a scientifically, what you think really happened. Were the buildings brought down by internal explosives? Was it some advanced physical principle weaponry? Is there evidence,
yeah,
of that underground? I'm not saying a nuke, but some advanced physical principle weaponry going on, maybe a tactical atomics weapon or something. And what about the planes? Were these real planes, or is it possible to you know, when I look at those films, the counter shock of when a plane hits a solid object. Usually the counter shock immediately shatters the tail. Yet this thing went in pristine.
Right.
You know, you can stop the film showing half the plane in the building like it's gelatin, and the part sticking out is absolutely pristine, which really defies physics.
Well, absolutely. I'm in complete agreement with you, and even though I'm a kind of a black sheep in the 9/11 truth movement, I think I'm onto the real deal here, and there's two issues that are prominent, and you named them both. One is, what about the planes? Well, there were no planes, folks, and I can prove it, and I can take it to a court of law and prove it scientifically, and I'll come back to that.
Yeah, tell us how the magic show was done.
Yeah. Well, it's video fakery, you know, it's manipulated pixels. But also, right up top, the other headline is, exotic weapons turned the World Trade Center to dust. The two towers have very little solid debris at the ground zero. And then they drilled these cylindrical type holes in the street. You know, they have a beam weapon is what it amounts to, okay?
A scalar cannon sort of thing?
Yeah. I'm not willing to name, you know.
But whatever, it's advanced physical principle weaponry.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a black budget. It's a black technology thing.
Yeah.
And I've worked with Dr. Judy Wood, a PhD engineer. And if you go to drjudywood.com, you will find the Star Wars beam weapon article where we prove it up. And we show you they've got these things, okay?
Oh,
and they've got them in space, meaning in...
Yeah, give us that, that website. It's Dr.
It's Dr. Dr.
Yes.
Judy.
Yes.
Wood, WOOD.com.
Okay.
You might want to interview her, but she's a real physical scientist I work with, and we've looked at all the data, you know, the incredible nature of the damage at the World Trade,
yeah,
Center. First of all, the towers weighed about 500,000 tons apiece,
yeah,
and if they had been brought down, as the government says, in a fire from airplanes and weakening steel and then a pancake collapse, that would be 500,000 tons of debris, first of all. And then it fell on the so-called bathtub, the slurry wall that protected the site from the Hudson River. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, and the PATH trains, you know, the tunnels they go under the Hudson River over to New Jersey, and you would have flooded lower Manhattan, and the powers that be wouldn't have liked that.
No.
You know, you would have caused international chaos in the monetary sector and the stock exchanges and whatnot. So they actually protected the site.
Yes.
And they basically dustified these buildings. They turned the steel. Mostly, you know, all that dust, that was some of it carried into the upper atmosphere, and that's abnormal. You ever follow a truck,
yes.
a pickup truck along a gravel road? That
yeah.
dust settles out almost immediately. And then you have low seismic readings. You have extraordinary damage to cars, some 1,400 of them we call toasted cars, you know, delaminated doors, deformed windows. You got engine blocks disappeared without any damage to gasoline tanks. You have paper all around. You have burning cars. There's just all kinds of extraordinary effects that occurred that cannot be accounted for by any kind of conventional weaponry. And then Dr. Wood believes further that the so-called lathering up, there was lathering up of these buildings with this peculiar kind of fuming going on.
Uh-huh.
So if you think there was some kind of chemical type substance or gas combined with the beams to activate it, you can see that, Lenny, you might have seen the History Channel docuganda the other night about
yes.
9/11 conspiracy theories.
Yes.
And they actually had a shot. I've got to get that DVD because there's a shot where the camera seems like it's four or five stories up. First of all, they go across the Ground Zero site, and Building 7 still standing, so you know it's late in the afternoon from the shadows.
Yes.
Building 7 still there. And you go across Ground Zero, and you can see that there's not even one story of debris there,
right.
except for a few spots, you
yeah.
know, where, like, the lobby, the tower lobby walls are standing for the North Tower on one side.
Yeah.
That didn't get taken out right away. So it's very low debris. You notice this first, and you see some GZ workers out there. And then, in the background, you can see Building 7 fuming. It's a very excited, dark charcoal. Like gas action that's going on. What they're doing is lathering up the building. They're about ready to take it out with some kind of we don't know specifically what kind of beam weapon, but they got a lot of the light spectrum to choose from. And we all know about a microwave oven. You know, they invented
exactly.
that in 1945. They
yes.
got the laser beam in 1955. What do people think? They haven't gone any further.
That's
in
what
that?
I've been saying. Exactly.
Yeah. So. At any rate, we have a heck of a case developed. We can prove they used some kind of exotic weapon to turn these twin towers and all the other WTC buildings. They partially destroyed the others. Well, they totally destroyed 7 as well. But the other four buildings, I mean, the Marriott Hotel, that was a 22-story building.
Mm-hmm.
They did it in two stages, ironically. They took a big V cut out of it during the South Tower destruction. And then, when the North Tower was destroyed, they took out the rest of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I never realized that.
Oh, yeah. You go to see our article with Dr. Wood, and I've helped her on it. Of course, she's the leading physical scientist on our project. But there's remarkable things there. And as I say...
And by the way, your website, which is going to have a link on our website, is nomoregames.net.
Yes.
And people who are already listening to this... show already have that link, but also I'm going to add Dr. Judy's
Dr. Judy Wood, yeah, very important. And as I say, have her as a guest and talk about some of these issues in detail.
Absolutely.
But here's the other thing, of course, is the plane fraud. Now, arguably, the plane fraud is even more important than the kind of technology they use to justify the World Trade Center. The reason is that the mass media, the corporate or captive media, are obviously in on it. In other words, they sold a lie.
Right.
They showed video fakery, okay,
yeah,
to make you believe that planes went in there. Now, the real, I'm not a video expert, but on the other hand, I am a PhD and think for myself.
Yeah.
And I don't work for the government, okay? And the real way I convince people and prove it up that no, at all foresight, there was not a plane crash, folks.
So in other words, what they did is they used the video imagery to make it appear as if the planes hit the building.
And the gashes and the explosions in both towers were done by other means.
They were done by either internal explosions or from particle beam weapons.
Some outside. It could have been. I'm not selling any particular method. There's some a case for a missile or two or UAVs.
Well, people on the ground would not. The people on the ground. Saw something hit Tower 2. Now, Tower 1, they wouldn't have been watching, right?
Well,
the first tower hit, they wouldn't
have... Well, the eyewitnesses are, of course, an extremely mixed bag.
They're agent provocateurs, a lot of them.
Huh?
A lot of them are agent provocateurs.
That's right. Some of them are hired actors agents, saying, it's just rubbish. They even sound dishonest in these videos. But there's a good activist no-planer by the name of Peggy Carter in New York, and as she puts it, well, a lot of people claim they know somebody who knew somebody who claims they saw a plane.
Right.
this is the kind of mush and contradictory stuff you get. Well, science will trump eyewitnesses.
Yeah.
And, eyewitnesses at best cancel each other out. Just to spend one more minute on the
eyewitnesses. Oh, yeah, we've got time. Go ahead.
There's one of the news reporters at the site, World Trade Center, on ABC, Don Dollar. He was on the ground, and he's saying, oh, my God, there's another explosion. He's talking about the second tower hit.
Yeah.
There's another explosion.
Right.
And then Charles Gibson, they go back to the studio. He's one of the anchors along with Diane Sawyer, and Charles Gibson very patiently says, there is another plane. It just went into the building, very calmly.
Right.
And Don Dollar says, what, a plane? I didn't see it. Oh, I must be. And Gibson says, no, a plane just went in there. And he says, oh, my view must be blocked. Well, let's think about an audio, an ear witness.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me that this here, Nest says that a Boeing 767, a wide body, United 175 went in there at 542 miles an hour. 540. Don't you think you're going to be making a racket? I was sitting next to O'Hare Airport at this 9/11 Chicago conference a little over a year ago. I was taping an interview outside, and every other minute a plane went out, and you couldn't hear me. We had to stop the interview, right?
Right.
And now those engines are going balls out, full throttle. Well, you're going balls out. I don't even believe a 767 flying level at sea level with such air resistance can hit 542 miles an hour, but I can't get a straight story out of anybody, including a couple of airline pilots I know. But be that as it may, the sound would have been, I don't hear anything about this deafening sound. And then at the North Tower, supposedly American Airlines Flight 11, flew the entire length of Manhattan, 11 or 12 miles. And where are all these eyewitness reports about this thing coming up, stoking along at 1,500 feet above them, just above them?
Yeah.
It would have been blowing people over.
Yeah.
You don't hear anything about that.
No.
So anyway, the eyewitnesses who testify to impossible physics are worse than useless, okay?
Sure.
And the summary is, that an aluminum beer can, a hollow aluminum tube, which is it describes an airplane pretty well, with two outboard engines and aluminum wings, cannot fly through a steel concrete tower and disappear.
Yeah, exactly.
That's ridiculous.
Well, that's what I said on the night of September 11th, and of course everybody was calling in on our show saying, oh, don't you have any pity for the, and I wish I had had the quote from Ayn Rand that you have on your site, pity for the guilty is treason to the innocent. I wish I had had that, known that. I just learned that when I saw your site. I didn't realize that that was a quote.
Right.
I wish I had it at my disposal that night. But this is the thing, the shock and awe of it prevents rational thought, numbs rational thought
at the moment. That's right. They traded on the shock and awe, the independence. You look at some of the clips and the pictures where you see this awesome rollout of this dark cloud, going to eat you. It's like Independence Day type effects. And Americans were traumatized. oh man, we're getting, you know, attacked by somebody or something.
Yeah, it was another Orson Welles in the day.
Yeah, Orson Welles, War of the Worlds, right. And we're disoriented, number one. We're fearful, number two. And number three, we're ignorant.
Yeah.
People, Americans are scientific ignoramuses.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, not just Americans. Let's not just...
Well, Americans are especially ignorant, I think. Yeah, that's what these international school test comparisons. More foreign countries actually drill their students in science than we do. You know, and then our graduate schools, it's a complete joke. What do American students go and study? They get an MBA, right? They go to law school. They go to medical school. And we know what a racket that's become. A government, you know, any government touches turns to shit. That's a German economist friend of mine comment.
Yeah.
Okay. And you go into the science department, physical science, all the grad students are foreign. You know, 98% of them are foreign.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, be that as may, Americans are afraid of science. You know, you go into court. I mean, they're afraid. They're just intimidated by anything that's scientific. But I don't know how. Get me back on track, Lenny.
All right. Yeah. Well, we don't have to stick on any one topic. It's nice to shotgun this whole thing because there's so much that people aren't aware of.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, let's go back.
So you think maybe to create the magic show, they use both their control of the video television networks.
Yeah.
And create these special effects.
The special effects.
And create the shock and awe. And of course, Sherman Skolnick, my former co-host, God rest his soul, he discovered that Barbara Olson, and wrote her article, was still alive. Of course, this is Ted Olson's wife, who's supposed to be on the plane that hit the Pentagon. Do you want to go into a little bit about the Pentagon?
Well, of course, there was no airline.
It was
the Pentagon.
Exactly.
That's the number one thing. Even most people who, in the 9/11 truth movement, who resist ferociously the whole no plane issue at the World Trade Center, agree with this, where the hole's too small, you can't land a Boeing 757 or any light wing loaded aircraft going at top speed at the first floor. You know, these pictures are hilarious. When I was showing them in Madison at a conference where one of these believers in the official story at the Pentagon, he shows this smudge line horizontal right above the first floor windows.
Yes.
And he labels that with an arrow, wing mark. Wing mark. You know, the whole thing is ridiculous. But if you had a wing that low, strike that low, there would have been giant gouges from these engines that hang well below one story, you know. And here's another aspect of it. What the official account is that there's a 45-degree penetration of three rings by this airplane that disappeared through a 16-foot hole.
Yeah.
With no wings, no tail out on the lawn. Well, one of the things people haven't noted is the right wing and engine would hit the building first at this 45-degree angle, you know,
right,
going northeast.
Right.
And that would mean the wrecking ball, which is the Pentagon, would hit that wing and engine and knock that plane silly clockwise. In other words, the plane would get knocked from its right to its left,
yep,
and it would throw that tail section a couple of miles.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I'm exaggerating, but, you know, hundreds of feet,
yeah,
or yards.
Yeah.
To have this, you know, this 45-degree line is just laughable physics. That's not the way plane crashes happen.
Well, you know, Dr. Reynolds, since 1969, we've been trying to get people to realize that if you could believe in the single bullet theory, you know, I mean, it's bizarre to believe in Santa Claus. Now, if you can get people to convince them about the single bullet theory, then 30 or 40 years later, it's nothing to get them convinced that planes hit the Pentagon or could fly into the World Trade Center.
Right.
I don't mean to digress. Go ahead.
Well, I like that because there's another piece of magical physics, right?
Yeah.
And it was pre-9/11, you know. Well, supposedly, 9/11 changed everything, including physics. Laws of physics were suspended that morning for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just completely ridiculous. And then if you go to the Shanksville, where they showed us this 20-foot-long wing-shaped hole,
yes,
that's no more than 10 feet wide and 6 feet deep, and say, oh yeah, Flight 93 went in there. Well, you know, this is a complete joke.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. Where are your plane parts? They had no plane parts. The wingspan on a 757 is 125 feet, and you show me this 20-foot-long hole?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know what, Lenny? They're into such hubris.
Yes.
Such degree of difficulty. It's like Larry Bird, you know. Shooting with the he just takes extra tough shots just to show up. Well, that's what these guys are. You know, look at how big my balls are is what they're about.
Yeah.
So, and that'll catch them up. Now, here's the real, this is what one friend of mine, Joseph Keith, who's a no-planer, is. He says, the media are the enforcement arm. You know, they're the PSYOP arm.
Yes.
For
yes.
the powers that be.
Yeah.
And they're so overconfident that Charlie Gibson and Katie Couric and all these other assholes can sell this.
Yeah.
That glitches or impossibilities, it's not a problem. They'll be able to sell America on anything.
Yes.
Now, I think they're wrong. Hubris is going to catch them up. In other words, that's one of the things. We've got a couple of great things working for us. One is the truth.
Right.
They've got to lie about everything.
Yes.
They've got to shut up Morgan Reynolds and, you know, they've got big problems. And then they get overconfident. It's almost like a foreign government or a U.S. government who starts aggressing. And you chew up a couple of early soft targets. You grab the low hanging fruit, and then you're just Mr. Big, and you keep going. Well, you keep going until you get stopped, and your overconfidence ends up tripping you up.
Well, I understand that. I'm wondering though, what will be the next 9/11, and if they pull another 9/11 now, will that be a way of covering up this 9/11? I mean, Watergate was a great way of covering up the Kennedy assassination, as we know, with Hillary Clinton on the Watergate committee working for Daddy Bush, covering his involvement on it.
Yeah, that was kind of like the Clinton and versus Republican modus operandi, you know?
Yeah.
Clinton, well, the Republicans would get him, or at least nominally catch up Clinton in something. And before you could really ring that out, there would be something new. Right.
Yeah.
One event displaces the other.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
But back to the mechanics. It's interesting, the mechanics of how they pulled this magic show off, because it really was a superb job. And they must have done a lot of testing on other structures, maybe in other countries, but they had to do some sort of a dry run.
Listen to your comment about the buildings is really striking, because Dr. Juhi Wood has a photo, like a standard media photo, of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Remember April 19th, 1995? And it really shows kind of the cylindrical cutouts that are a whole series of them that took out basically the front half of the building.
Yep.
Yeah, this is supposedly a fertilizer truck bomb, you know. And here again, they're pulling our legs.
Exactly.
So
we did an interview with Benton Parton a number of times on this show, so...
He did good work on that issue.
Yeah. And for those listening who don't know, the bottom line is Benton Parton, who's one of the top experts on forensics of bomb forensics, discovered that it was and found that it was a bomb inside the building. Definitely.
But Dr. Wood has juxtaposed that picture of the eaten away Oklahoma Murrah Building against an entire shot of WTC-6, which was the six was an 8-story building that was on the north side of the North Tower. It was between Building 7 and the North Tower, okay, 8-story building.
Yes.
And about 40 or 50% of the interior of that building was eaten away with very little debris at the bottom, okay, 8 stories steel structure. Well, there's a shot very similar to what we have at the Murrah Building from the ground floor up with the sun shining on this hollowed-out interior.
Uh-huh.
And you could say, well, which one's the Murrah Building? They look alike.
Oh, really?
There is some evidence that, yeah, they tested this thing. Their new gizmo.
Yes, their new gizmo. And so Oklahoma may have been the testing ground for the 9/11.
That was a ramp-up. Yeah. And if you talk to some military guys, honestly, they love these things, you know?
Yes.
You know, blowing stuff up.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
It's fun.
Yeah.
So you're right. Yeah, I think there's good evidence that they used tested weaponry, and of course they had years to plan this. Now you ask, well, you know, what if they do another one? Well, first of all, we know they will if they think they need it, right?
Yes.
And I'm beginning to think they're kind of needing it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the many, they got a lot of problems. You can only ring the ballot box falsely so many times, and you might, the Republicans are looking like, you know, and Bush won't back out of the war in Iraq at all, and that's very unpopular, and the Republicans could just get wiped out in 2008. That's one of their many problems.
Is an educated populace a counter to this?
It certainly is. All governments rule by public opinion. I'm quoting Ludwig von Mises, the great Austrian economist, you know.
Right.
They all do. I don't care if you're a dictator or a tyrant. You've got to shape public opinion.
Yes.
And once you lose it, you're toast. You know, what if you're Mussolini in Italy or Ceausescu in Romania?
Yes.
You're gonna get your body stripped, you know, layer by layer in the streets. So they gotta keep control of public opinion, and that's why they control the media, you know. So, I don't know. You see all kinds of straws in the wind. I noticed they moved some kind of a high-tech Air Force group into the nation's capital. What's that about?
Yeah. Are they going to take out the Congress?
Yeah. Are they going to go to COG, right? Continuation of government with all powers vested in our great president, George W. Bush?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got the wherewithal, but I don't think they can really stuff that down America's throats. There's still Americans left. There's still the belief in individual rights.
And are there enough loyal people within the military who won't follow the orders?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's the same as the Soviet Union's problem with their so-called allies in Eastern Europe. You give them guns, the balloon goes up, which way are they going to shoot? They're going to shoot at the Soviets. Right?
Yeah.
And that reminds me of the no-plane issue, too, because some people believe there was some kind of stand-down order. They'll never find a stand-down order.
No.
That's one of the cool things about not using actual planes and plane crashes was there's too many patriots in the military.
Yeah.
Who would have been, airliner or airplane intercepts, you know, out of FAA control, that was a standard routine thing. You know, you're talking 8 or 10 of those operations a month. So lots of guys wanted to get up in the air, armed and dangerous.
Now, Keith Dewdney from the University in Western Ontario wrote this Operation Pearl. I wonder if you had any time to look at that, what you think about his
he's had that up a long time, and I don't think he believes it.
Okay. Yeah, well, it was a good first poem.
Yeah. It's early on, like the first 24 months.
Yes.
There's lots of, you know very little.
But it's felt now pretty well by the scientists that it was a missiles at all used to go into the,
into the Pentagon?
Well, let's just take the towers. Was there anything actually flying through the air, or was it completely a visual television show?
You know, this is a speculative. First of all, no plane crashed into either tower.
Right.
That we can prove by impossible physics as the media depicted. Then the question, and that's a powerful thing, by the way, Lenny, it's a very powerful thing because what's the whole war on terror, global domination project, you know, Silverstein profits and on and on and on.
Right.
Based on? It's based on the argument that there were airliners, number one. And number two, Muslim hijackers took over these planes and flew them into iconic buildings. Well, once you've shown there's no airliners, the rest of this thing all falls away.
Yeah, there's no war on
and
terror.
It goes, it removes, and America will really be PO'd once they really catch on to this fraud.
Do you think they'll catch on, though?
Huh?
Will they catch on?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know either. But
we're working away on it, and every day some more people have their eyes opened, and nobody ever goes back once they're opened.
Yeah. Well, of course, this is really the Reichstag fire of its day.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
But let's go back. Do you think missiles were used just to
simulate? So I'm just
reinforcing
that it's important to know that the official story is impossible. Now, what did happen is more speculative.
Yeah, just so you know, our audience is a very sophisticated audience, and in our interviews, we do very much what we call like a shop talk from plot headquarters type thing, where are really interested in not worrying about trying to convince the great unwashed,
right,
but just talk from a shop stock standpoint.
Understood.
As if we were a fly on the wall in the plot headquarters, listening
right
to the much hilarity behind the scenes, so to speak. As to,
I'm not married to any particular. They could have done it a variety of ways, including missiles, internal airplane-shaped explosives, the beam weapon. You know, that'd be a pretty good way to do it. But even the question about was there a flyby, I think there was a flyby in Pennsylvania because of the stock I put into the eyewitness testimony there.
Now, when you say a flyby, can you just explain what you mean by
that? Well, an airliner or an airliner-looking aircraft would fly over. Nobody in Pennsylvania, this would make some sense to convince them that really an airliner went down. But then there was this explosion and noise and fury to that effect. There were no eyewitnesses to the actual impact.
No one saw the impact. People saw an airliner, and then they heard an explosion.
Right. So that would give people, they're adding, connecting the dots and saying, no, it didn't crash there. They even, the Air Force, the military has stealth technology which allows you, this may be why they pulled it off on such a blue sky day.
Yes.
To turn an aircraft, now this is a very expensive one-off kind of deal, but to turn an aircraft invisible to the human eye, and they might have even done that flyby at the World Trade Center. I have a speculative article on my website, nomoregames.net, to that effect. What they do, in effect, is you time it so that the stealth turns the airplane blue. It'd be like a computer screen.
Right.
Okay? There are a couple of technologies that can do that. And it keeps on flying. You back off the throttle, and you got an explosion covering your getaway.
Yeah.
So this and where they staged this in Shanksville, that was a quarry that was a landfill, and they used the deep end of it to plant this fake dugout. And they even argued, the 757 disappeared, was absorbed by the earth. Give me a break, And one student of Dr. Judy Woods at Clemson said that day or the day after, it's a good thing the plane crashed there, because nobody would get hurt on the ground. No. She said to herself immediately, you mean there's nobody there to see it?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
exactly.
They had years, Lenny, to plan this. Now, they've been planning, other 9/11 type stunts to pull, and it's just a matter of getting the bugs out and then getting the word to go.
So, in your blue sky of this, were there any people that were airline passengers killed that day?
We don't know the answer to that, of course, because I didn't plan it and I didn't execute it. Now, some real lives were lost, as we know. In the building, right.
Yeah, but what about any airline passengers killed that day?
Well, there's no evidence. Well, two of the flights, of course, weren't in the BTS database, which is automated, the ACAR computerized system.
Right.
So the American planes, from an official point of view, never went, flights 11 and 77.
Right.
Now, the other two were in the BTS database. But and then these planes, the tail numbers were real planes, but the FAA did not deregister them, a couple of them, for months in January following the September 11th. And then 4 years later for a couple of them, I forget the specifics of that, but that was peculiar.
Somewhere I've heard, I don't remember where, but some of these planes were put back in service based on serial numbers or something?
Yeah, one of the tail numbers was, there are these airplane spotter hobbyists.
Yes.
They claimed they had pictures, and I don't know if that's true, but
okay.
A couple of them, they claimed, were still in service.
But the point is, it would be possible to pull this off and have dummy passenger lists. Dummy flights. The plane takes off, but it just never. It doesn't go to New York. It just disappears off the screens.
Yeah, I really doubt even the two Uniteds were real flights. And then there's a guy in Ohio by the name of Thomas Potter who keeps on checking on these manifests, and they never settled on final passenger manifest, which is another nothing fits
right.
About what they did. But he. Most of, he searches like the Social Security Death Index and other public sources,
yeah.
And he can find almost no evidence that these people were real.
Yeah.
Even the Todd Beamer thing doesn't check out, the alleged author of the immortal phrase, let's roll, which sounds very Bushian, right?
Yes.
You know, let's roll, meaning let's go kill Arabs or Afghanis. Let's go get somebody.
Yeah. And of course, the only thing linking the fact that there may be passengers is, once again, Ted Olson's wife's so-called phone call.
You know, one of the things is that, of course, they never proved any of this.
Right.
They never proved these phone calls existed. And, of course, the cell phone technology wasn't available to do that. And then they change all his air phones, and everything is bogus. And, you know, Ted Olson was the then the Solicitor General. That is, he was the DOJ guy who argued
Bush versus Gore cases
in the U.S. Supreme Court, and he's on record saying there are a lot of good reasons for government officials to lie.
Exactly, and
yeah.
Of course he worked for Bush during the stolen election.
Right,
he was the lawyer for Bush versus Gore.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so they got the five right lawyers, i.e., Supreme Court judges, to agree, we're going to appoint you, this guy, president, right?
Yeah, exactly. They five judges appointed him president, and
right.
Of course, Ted Olson's son works with Scalia's law firm, and the collusion and the corruption.
Oh, yeah.
Is just
and
right
then
the top.
To go back to the phone calls, one
you
of the things that is really funny to me is whoever writes these scripts, they didn't hire the right Hollywood types. For example, Barbara Olson at one point, she says, to her husband, what should I tell the pilot?
Yeah.
My favorite one is the one, Flight 93 in Shanksville, is where, this is your son, Mom, Mark Bingham.
Wow, yeah.
Who talks to their mom? This is Morgan Reynolds, Mom.
Yeah.
I'm your son.
Yeah,
remember
yeah,
me?
Yeah.
it's absolutely ludicrous. And yet, because of the media, both silence and active fraud by the media, they can sell this to a lot of Americans.
Yeah, the power of the media, the mass media, is just, as Marshall McLuhan said, we've leased and put our, extended our eyes, ears, and nerves out on these satellites, and the powers that be can now move and turn the reality in any tempo they
right.
choose. And make whatever reality they wish, and this is a perfect example of it.
Yeah. Well, one of the if we get decades, which is very questionable, one of the great things about the young people, and thought I'd never say this because I still love reading the morning newspaper, is they don't read newspapers. They don't believe the mainstream media. They go on the web, and they try and find out for themselves. And that's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, the problem is that we don't have a education system, but an indoctrination system, and we don't teach perception and how to hone our perceptual equipment.
Right. You know, one of the most frustrating things to me is the so-called 9/11 truth movement, which you and I aren't part of, because these are not active minds. They're limited hangout, gatekeeper types. So you can't talk about the fact that there's no proof for planes at the World Trade Center.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
There's no proof that thermite, or some kind of lousy conventional medium dustified the Twin Towers and destroyed the entire Trade Center, you know.
Well,
so
of course,
exotic effects.
Well, these guys, they start the organizations before the operation
exactly.
itself.
Exactly. You know from your study of the
Kennedy assassination, the JFK,
right.
All the agent provocateurs were publishing their books and had their books ready to print before the assassination even happened.
Right. The cover-up, in a
cover-up.
Sense, is even more important for the perps getting away with it than the execution of the crime itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's like Lenin allegedly said, you know, the way we'll handle the opposition is to lead it.
That's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
That's it. I didn't know he said that. That's it. That's perfect.
Yeah, that's attributed to him, at least.
Yeah.
I thought that sums up a lot of that.
Exactly. We'll lead it. The way I have to remember that, the way we handle the opposition is to lead it. Well, that's the Hegelian dialectic. They behind both sides, all sides.
Right. Well, it's been great talking to you.
It's been great talking with you. There's still a lot of areas that have been untouched that I'm looking forward to getting into and doing another briefing and hearing more from you and to have such an illustrious speaker as yourself.
Well, I thank you for that.
It's a terrific honor for us at Cloak and Dagger, and it's very helpful that people like yourself, who have the degrees and are the professors emeritus, come forward, because this is, helps the amateur detectives and researchers like myself to give us more credibility.
Thank you, and yes, we do need more of these people with who climb the traditional ladders to come forward and call it like it is.
Well, just stay on the line, and I'll just wrap up here. But Dr. Reynolds, it's great talking with you, and once again, your website is nomoregames.net. Remember, read it yourself instead of asking the government why, because that will cause the propaganda to die.